Welcome to the online ministry of La Jolla United Methodist Church, a congregation of faithful Christians right along the Southern California coast. Together, we seek to grow in our individual spirituality and in connected community with one another. All are invited to join in this vibrant faith community. For more information, visit our website at lajollaunitedmethodist.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
Ah, the holiday season, a time of joy, but oh, the rush and the hustle. Christmas time often means loading up the car with family, luggage, presents, and more. It's often a chaotic time where we can't help but remember the nostalgia of those Norman Rockwell-esque Christmases of the past. But did they ever really live up to our expectations? The reality of this season is that while it might look warm and fuzzy in old photographs, it can be pretty complicated. Just as Jesus' arrival in the world involved a long, perilous journey, our road to Christmas may require us to buckle up for an exhausting and exhilarating journey of our own. This Advent, we invite you on a road trip, the journey to Christmas.
When I was growing up, my house, some of you have heard this before, my house was the first house on our block that had a personal computer. It was an Apple. But it was an Apple II. But this connection with technology that has happened throughout all my life has caused me to be able to observe that what I carry around with me all day long, still an Apple, is something that is far more powerful than that computer that sat on my dad's desk that was run entirely on 2 floppy disks. It also gives me some perspective. The very first computer I bought for myself, not an Apple, it was a PC. I was a Windows guy for a minute. And it was in the early days of the internet. And when I say the early days of the internet, I mean before the World Wide Web. When you go to www.google.com to search for, you know, your favorite cookie recipe, do you know that the www in front stands for World Wide Web? Did you know that the http://// stands for Hypertext Transfer Protocol? And nowadays, you got to have HTTPS, which just adds a secure layer. Of course, there's other protocols like FTP, File Transfer Protocol. And my understanding of technology comes from that breadth of experience. When it comes to the World Wide Web, there are ways that we use the World Wide Web to find information. It's made our access to information incredible. And some of the back-end technology related to HTML, hypertext markup language, which is some of the text that's behind all the functionality of websites. It's a little different from PHP, which is PHP hypertext. We'll get to PHP later. I'm trying to show off that I missed. But one of the things, particularly with the World Wide Web, is sometimes we don't want to remember a long string of text to get to the website we're looking for. That's called a URL, a Uniform Resource Locator. Sometimes we don't want to remember that long string of text to just get to the page we're looking for on, you know, CNN or Disney's website or whatever. We don't need to. And so sometimes a website will create a shorter way to get to that then redirects us to where we actually want to go. And it's actually something really common. We use it on our website. Lots of websites will have a shortened address so that we can be redirected to someplace else to go. This is familiar to us. This is something we can easily understand. And redirection is actually really, really common. The ideas of recalculating or being redirected are fairly common in our lives. I know that we have teachers in our midst. And respectful redirection is an important part of teaching. When there is a behavior taking place in a classroom that's unacceptable, we want to respectfully redirect that behavior. And sometimes we'll do that on a one-on-one situation, and sometimes we'll do that in a broader setting, in a full classroom setting. Redirection. I have the privilege of being a parent. And whether your child is a year old, or a couple of years old, or 5 years old, or if you happen to have two incredible children who are 19 and 14, you still redirect. And maybe, I saw your hands up. Things are stretching. And maybe, if you are a parent of a child in their 20s or 30s or beyond, maybe you still participate in that act of redirection. I know that we have scientists and doctors and lawyers in the room. And scientists will hear about a new discovery in science that causes us to redirect and take a new approach in a study. Doctors will learn about a new procedure, something that has never been tried before, and then it's tried, and then it's found to be successful, and it can help so many people. I had a conversation just last night with someone about a procedure called an endoscopic third ventriculostomy. Did I say it right? Thank you. A process, it's a neurosurgical process, a process that was fairly new, and that now helps people who suffer from hydrocephalus. I know that when an attorney presents a case to a judge before a court, and when that judge or court makes a ruling that sometimes causes that attorney to have to redirect. Redirection is something we're very familiar with. Now, just a brief check-in. For all of our professionals, teachers and doctors and scientists and lawyers, how did I do? Do we really face these times of redirection? Am I addressing this well? Does this connect with you? Because my point in talking about these things is to help make this concept of redirection relatable. Because we all face this kind of redirection. It happens all throughout our lives. And I would suggest that very often it's very effective. Sometimes it's wonderful and used for good. And sometimes it clouds our minds a bit. Sometimes it's used to a different kind of effect. Did you know that 77% of Americans, according to a recent study, 77% of Americans know we know that the rate of crime is rising in the United States, and we're really troubled about it. Did you know that the most recent report from the Federal Bureau of Investigation says that violent crime has dropped 8%, property crime has fallen 6.3%, which puts us at the lowest crime level since 1961. NBC News is my source. That links directly both to the FBI's data and another nonprofit related to criminal justice. We can be redirected in wonderful and helpful ways. And sometimes we can be redirected in ways that are less than helpful. I would suggest, inspired by our friends who met with the Explorers this morning, that redirection is a way for us to remember that God makes all things new. But sometimes we have trouble receiving that. Sometimes we have trouble remembering it. You know, I said last week, and I was really serious about this, but also I confess I wanted us to remember the beauty of music, and I wanted to invite us all to the choir concert. I said last week that one of the ways that we really experience emotion is through music. I think what I said about it was music is emotion without words sometimes. And sometimes there's words too. And one of the things that I think about that helps us understand the way that church and faith and spirituality has changed over the years is to look at how music has been incorporated in worship over the years. And you may know that way back in Christian music history, you would have unison voices singing in Latin because that was the only appropriate way for there to be music in worship. Unison, simple melody, in Latin. Only way. It's the only appropriate way. But then somebody got bold and started adding harmonies. And for a while, those people were frowned upon. You can't add a harmony. That takes away from God. If you continue on the journey of musical history, particularly related to church and worship, there came a time where not only were there harmonies, then there were more complex melodies. Now, very often there were phrases in Latin that would repeat over and over and over again. Not a lot of the people who heard that music understood Latin, but that was the right language, according to the poet. And maybe as long as we're still in Latin, we can deal with those harmonies and those more complex melodies. You know what happened later on? Somebody really went too far. They really went too far. And they said, you know what we need in church music? Way too far. You can't do this. They introduced the organ. They went too far. But if you ask someone today to take the organ out of church, you're going to hear about it. But there came a time where the organ was brand new. People said, you can't do that. That's too much like the circus-like places, festivals. Can't do that in church. Church music changed with the introduction of deep theology in music. Walking away from those repetitive Latin phrases. The phrases in a language that most people didn't speak. Into languages that people did speak. In some cases, the tunes borrowed from a nearby prophet, Charles Wesley. Yes, I believe that. Using those familiar and joy-filled tunes to teach deep theology. The whole thing. And then the advent of Christian pop and rock in the 80s and 90s. Sometimes we're hearing theology, and sometimes we're hearing repetition. And sometimes we say, oh, that's too repetitive. I don't want to sing the same phrase over and over again, even though it's exactly what we did in the beginning in a language that people didn't even speak. Behold, I will make all things
working on a six-song EP to be released on a various streaming platforms. And sometimes bringing their guitar to church to sing things from Fleetwood Mac and John Denver, and maybe even today, Carrie Underwood. I would suggest that the entire presence of Christ in first century Palestine, Gaza, Israel, the entire presence of Christ is a redirection as God continues to make things new. Who was it? Who was it who stood in the wilderness wearing camel hair? Who was so outlandish that everyone came to see him? John the Baptist. I am the voice in the wilderness, making the crying out that the valleys will be brought low and the valleys will be strengthened. The mountains brought low and the valleys brought low. And declare all friends, not just this group or that group or this group, all friends have seen the salvation of God. And the text we read today, John is questioned, who are you to say these things? Who are you to do these things? Are you a prophet? No. Who are you? Well, I'm not the Christ. I am a voice crying out in the wilderness, make the Lord's path straight. And why do you baptize if you aren't the Christ, if you aren't Elijah, if you're not the prophet? I baptize with water. Someone greater stands among you and you don't recognize. He comes after me, but I'm not worthy to untie his sandals. John expresses what our candlelight is today describes fierce joy. Standing in the face of these questions, saying, there is room for hope. He stood in the wilderness eating locusts and wearing camo hair, and was so profound in his message, in his expression, in his personality, in his message, that everyone in the community could not help. You know what the very next line is after the end of the text we read today? We ended with verse 28. This encounter took place across the Jordan in Bethany where John was baptized. And the next 6 months, the very next 6 months, the next day, John saw Jesus. Are we a people who can stand in the fierceness of joy, in the profound difficulty of hope, and stand and be the light of the kingdom, knowing that the very next